Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Got to start with the NHL. Hockey. Why? Because there's nothing better than a Game 7. Nothing better than Game 7, especially in the NHL. Everything on the line for 60 minutes of end-to-end action. Great goals. Amazing saves. Guys laying it all on the line. A crowd that is going ballistic the entire night. And if you're really lucky, you might get overtime. That's the best thing ever. Except last night was pretty much none of those things. Last night was not the best. Last night was actually pretty horrible by Game 7 standards. Because the Winnipeg Jets rolled into Smashville and dominated. That game was nothing like all those things I just laid out. Sheryl Crow sings the national anthem. Eddie George waves a towel. Then Pekka Rinne waved a white flag. All right, maybe that's a little harsh. Then again, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not harsh enough. 8:40 into the first period, this happened.
Push from behind, drop the puck off. Here comes Myers, centering side of the net. They score! Rinne in disbelief can't believe that the puck is behind him, and the Winnipeg Jets have scored the first goal of game number 7.
Well, the reaction is just such an odd one from Rinne. Didn't know where the heck that one was. From a really bad angle with traffic in front, where does it go? Oh, man, wow. How did that get through?
Yeah, how did that get through? Rinne was in disbelief. The entire world was in disbelief. I mean, I'm not going to say that that's the softest playoff goal I've ever seen allowed, and especially damaging, since I also said yesterday, whoever scores first is going to win that game. But that was the softest playoff goal I've ever seen allowed. Rinne allowed maybe the softest goal in playoff history. That was a disastrous start for the Preds. I mean, that's exactly the kind of goal that you cannot give up in a Game 7. And if it was insane to see Rinne, a Vezina Trophy finalist, concede one like that, then it would be truly stunning to see him do it again. And there's no way that would happen, except it did.
By Tanev. Another change to Stastny line coming on. Stastny backhander scores! Another sharp angle goal, and Paul Stastny has made it 2-0 Winnipeg.
Oh, what a nightmarish start for the home team here, but Paul Stastny ended the night for Pekka Rinne. Amazingly, 9:13 left in the first period, and Rinne is gone for the third time in this series.
Right. That ended his night. Rinne's night was done. And then Nashville's was done. The team, the fans, the season. Down 2-0. Preds head coach Peter Laviolette yanked the legend from the game to get a quick breather for his team without having to use a timeout. And then to get some life in the group. And frankly, to get Pekka the hell out of that game. Conceding one soft goal is a problem. Two is a nightmare. And being on the wrong end of the fastest hook in Game 7 history is the absolute worst. It was worse than awful. I'll tell you how bad it was. Winnipeg goalie Connor Hellebuck said, quote, "It was heartbreaking." I mean, that tells you something, right? When the opposing goalie is heartbroken watching you get pulled from a game. That's heartbreaking. Rinne himself said, quote, "The biggest moment of the season, it's a terrible feeling. You let your teammates down, and that's what happened tonight. That's tough to swallow." I mean, you remember right after that went down, he went into the tunnel, and he was just sitting there in the corner, in the tunnel, in the darkness, still in his pads. I mean, it was a sad, sad look. You better go check. I think my man's still there. I mean, for all the talk about Rinne potentially being too old, he didn't look it. He didn't look it until the worst possible moment. And then he looked really old and really slow. Maybe it was bad luck. Maybe it was a lack of focus. But then again, maybe he's a shot fighter. You know, the former champ who steps between the ropes one night and suddenly has lost it all. Suddenly, the guy can't pull the trigger. He can't land any shots. He can't slip any punches either. A guy who's shot. A shot fighter. That's Rinne. I mean, I'd love to say it was only one bad night. Just one really bad night. But the guy was pulled 3 times in the series. And as far as it being just one bad night, all right, fine. Fine. One bad night. Just as long as you say that bad night was the worst night ever. Because it was. No goalie in the history of the NHL has ever gotten a quicker hook in a Game 7 than he did last night. That's how bad a night that was. The worst night ever for a goalie. In one of the most important games of his and all of their lives, that was the worst night ever. Meanwhile, the Jets, they had it. They were feeling it. They were causing problems. And they were making themselves right at home in one of the toughest barns in the league. Down 2-0, that arena was shocked. I mean, it was shell-shocked. Hell, I was shocked. And I say that as somebody. Now, you listen very closely right now. It's important that you hear this. I was shocked. And I say that as somebody who never, ever bought into Nashville. But more on that in a second. The Preds were simply sleepwalking through that first period. That is, until P.K. Subban got a look with just over 4 minutes to go.
Ryan Johansson back out for a Subban pass. He scores!
Sometimes when you're watching hockey, you take the passing for granted. This puck is right in the wheelhouse. I don't want to say a no-look backhand pass by Johansson. He knows exactly where P.K. Subban is. He puts it on a table, and Subban just fires it off the post and in.
All right, 2-1 Winnipeg, right? We got a game. We have ourselves a game. Actually, no, we don't. Because Winnipeg went up 3-1 at the 17:50 mark of the second. And then it was over because Nashville was not going to score on Connor Hellebuyck last night. My man might look like Henry Thomas, but he was playing like Patrick Waugh. They attack on a fourth, an empty netter in the third. The final score is 5-1. Winnipeg winning in Nashville. But don't be surprised, because I'm not. The Jets won 3 out of 4 in Nashville in this series. And they won by huge margins. They did not fluke their way to this win. They earned it. They deserved it. They were the better team, as I said all along. Now the Jets are hosting Vegas in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. So how pumped are you, Winnipeg? React to me, Winnipeg. I want to hear from Swan River, Selkirk, Winkler. How are you celebrating? Thompson, Mystery Lake, Unorganized Division, number 22. Are you throwing on your Dale Hawerchuk and Thomas Steen sweaters? Flynn Flawn, are you partying at Whitney Forum? React to me. You're close, Winnipeg. And you are awesome, and I knew it. What's up, Winnipeg? Texas head coach Tom Herman is my guest. Tom, it is great to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing great, Romy. Appreciate you having me back.
Tom, it's great to have you back. Thanks so much. You know, I had Mike Gundy on yesterday, and we were talking about how he's spending some of his time away from the practice field. He talked about he trains dogs, he works on a farm, so on and so on. So let me ask you, Tom, how is life for you right about now?
Well, I've got a 14-year-old daughter, a 10-year-old son, and a 4-year-old son, so I wish I had that kind of time. But my time away from the practice field and not on the road recruiting is usually spent with them. My 10-year-old got knocked out of the playoffs in baseball last night, so that was a good dad moment to kind of coach your kid on how to deal with getting beat in the playoffs. And actually last week or earlier this week with our athletic director raising some money for a new south end zone facility for our football team, and we raised $27 million in 2 days. So it's a pretty good week.
I'd say that's a pretty good week, $27 million in 2 days. You go back to your son for a minute. Tom, was that kind of gut-wrenching for you as a father to watch that? And in terms of the teaching moment, what did you tell him?
Yeah, it was, Romy. I mean, anybody that's been a parent and had kids, you know, they won the regular season championship. So that was his first time being on an organized team that he'd won a championship. He was really fired up about it. And, you know, it was a little bit tougher for him, too, because he struck out to end the game with his team down in the bottom of the sixth inning. So he was pretty shook up. And, you know, I just told him, hey, you know, there's going to be a lot of moments in your athletic endeavors that you're going to come up short. And the only way that we know how to overcome that is to work harder. And so we vowed that we were going to work really hard this off season and to make sure that if that situation ever comes up again, that, that he's not going to strike out and he's going to get on base and keep the inning alive.
Tom Herman joining us as a father. I think we've all been there with kids in those moments, so I had to ask you about that. I'm glad to get your thoughts. Hey, listen, my sources tell me you are in the process, however, of overhauling your physique these days. Is it true, and how's that going?
I recommitted myself after signing day to working out. Last year was pretty stressful for me, and I probably could have handled that stress a little bit better had I been working out and taking an hour a day to take care of my body. So I did. I since February, I think I've gone 9 or 10 straight weeks here with at least 4 workouts within the week, and I feel good. I haven't lost a lot of weight, which is okay. I've just kind of reproportioned it and reshaped it and feel pretty good.
I like it. Tom Herman joining us. All right, Tom, 1 year in, what do you know about this job maybe that you didn't know when you first took that job?
Yeah, I think, Romy, just how fragile this team was when we took over, 3 straight losing seasons. We'll do that to you. But I think we did – kind of have a seminal moment in the bowl victory. We were out by my count 8 guys that had started games for us. So out of 22, 11 on each side of the ball, to have 8 starters down and to go play an SEC team that had won 6 straight games and beat them the way that we did. I think there was a bit of an aha moment, in that locker room where I think a lot of those kids said, "Hey, we can do this, and if we do what this crazy guy and his staff tell us to do, then we can accomplish some pretty incredible things." And we've had a tremendous offseason. These guys have busted their tails; they're bought in like nobody's business. And I'm really excited to coach this team.
I understand, Tom, when you talk about how fragile that team was when you got there. But the fact of the matter is, in their defense, in your defense, there were times when you had a true freshman at quarterback, a true freshman at running back, one at tight end, one at right tackle. Obviously, that is not ideal from a coaching standpoint. But what do you make of how those guys responded to those challenges?
Yeah, that's not an ideal situation to light the scoreboard on fire. But the best thing about true freshmen in college football is they become sophomores, and they got a lot of experience. They were thrown into the fire, and they learned a lot of valuable lessons, and they've developed. They've taken that challenge. I mean, that right tackle we're talking about, Derek Kerstetter, he wasn't even shaving, and not because he was trying to grow a beard. It was because he didn't need to shave. I mean, he was literally that youthful, if you will. And so those guys are bigger, stronger, faster now that they've they've developed as football players. They've had really good springs, and so we're excited to see that development kind of come to fruition in the fall.
Texas head football coach Tom Herman joining us. When you undertake an overhaul like that, you talk about a buy-in. So what are the signs that players are starting to buy in? How do you know that what you're selling them or what you're trying to teach them, the message you're trying to get across, is in fact getting across?
Well, I think, there was another moment. I meet with, I like to tell this story. I meet with about 12 or 15 leaders probably once a week, once every 10 days. And I was asking them early in the semester, hey, how's the locker room, coach? It's great. Everybody, we're a lot closer as a team. We're having fun together. We're working our tails off. And I said, well, what's different? And one kid real quickly said, we're happy. And it was almost accusatory. And so I had to explain to him, I said, and I ran down the list of all the different things where Coach Sherman and our staff, where we had to reinforce our culture just within that last week, whether it be a guy not finishing a drill and getting reminded very firmly that we finish drills around here, starting an up, down, over because the guy didn't hit his chest, so on. And so, a guy being 5 minutes late for a tutor and his whole position group having to run. And I said, so the standards have never changed and will not change. But you're hearing Coach Herman and Coach Herman's staff, we're not yelling as much. We're not having to reinforce the culture so much. So, but when we do, it's the same. And so if the standards haven't changed and Coach Herman hasn't changed, then what's changed? And you saw the kind of the gears turning and the light bulbs go off, and they're like, well, we've changed.
Right.
And that was kind of a fun moment to see, like, yeah, you guys are reaching these standards of excellence at such a higher clip in all of our workouts and drills and practices that it is. It's fun to be around these guys, and everybody's pretty happy.
Tom Herman, my guest. So one last thought. It's starting to take shape, and these guys are starting to get it and buy in. You and Mac Brown were in Dallas recently celebrating Ricky Williams being inaugurated into the Cotton Bowl Hall of Fame. He has been around the program a lot more since you took over. What does he mean to you as a person, and how much do you enjoy it when he's on the campus or on the practice field with your guys?
Yeah, I mean, he gave me my start. You know, I was a graduate assistant for Coach Brown back in 1999 and 2000. And, you know, I was breaking down film, running the scout team, and I learned so much in those 2 years with him. And to have him around, I consider him a mentor. I've stayed in touch with him my entire career, and to have him around is a tremendous sounding board, because he's 16 years at the University of Texas, 10 straight years with 10 wins or more, a national championship, College Football Hall of Fame, you name it. The man has done it, and he's done it at Texas. And so if something comes up and I need advice with, he's the first person I call.
What about Ricky Williams? What's it like having him around?
Oh, he's great. You know, one of my earliest memories as a GA, they threw me on the back of a float. I was about a week on the job. They threw me on the back of a float in a parade in the Cotton Bowl victory, and Ricky winning the Heisman, and I was right behind Ricky Williams, and they said, don't let anybody touch him. I said, oh my gosh, okay. So Ricky Williams actually is the first person that taught me the hook 'em horn sign. So it's great to have him back. He's had a great career and tremendous ambassador for the University of Texas.
Texas coming off their first winning season since 2013 and a good bowl game as well. Their head coach, Tom Herman, my guest. They open up against Maryland on September 1st. Tom, great to have you back. Always appreciate you and the visit. Thanks so much. Let's do it again soon.
All right. Thanks, Romy. Hook 'em horns.
This email, Rome, you're freaking awesome. I cannot believe that you nailed your NHL prediction yet again. Just when I think that you're finally going to get burned, here you are again making a miraculous comeback, picking the Preds to not win the Stanley Cup this year is amazing, especially with how good they looked coming into the year. Can you please tell me once again to buy Bitcoin? Because you just can't miss. Matt in Poland Springs. He's onto something. He's got a point there. So let's get into this. I didn't want to make it about me. I didn't want to take a victory lap. I didn't want to pat myself on the back. But since there is this controversy and this seemingly disagreement and non-consensus as to what I said, what I did, I have no idea how there's anything lost in the translation. But let's be very clear about this. Let's take a step back for a moment. Let's reflect on this for a moment. Now, you know, it takes a very big man to admit when he's wrong. A big man to say he messed up. I would like to think that part of the reason why you like this show, part of the reason why you listen to this show, is because you know you're going to get the real, the truth from me. I'm going to keep it real. I'm going to be accountable. If I make a mistake, I'll own it. Always have, always will. Why? Because I hold everybody else to that standard. How can I sit here in this box for 30 years and hold everybody else to that standard, but not myself? I would never do that. That's not what I'm about. The sign of real maturity is when you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I'm not perfect, because that's the truth. I'm not perfect. Nobody is, especially when it comes to predictions. Especially when it comes to hockey predictions, which is why I want to take this opportunity to say to you listening, to look into the camera if you're watching, and I want to take this opportunity to own this. I want to take this opportunity to apologize. To apologize to absolutely nobody at all.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Because I have absolutely nothing to apologize for. Not only do I have nothing to apologize for, but I hate to say I told you so, Nashville honks, but, well, I told you so. And yes, I should be the bigger man here. And yes, I should just console Preds fans in their honor of need and grief. But I told you this was going to happen. I called my shot before the playoffs started. And while I'm not going to claim to be the amazing Kreskin and say that I knew Nashville was going to choke at home in Game 7 of the second round, I knew this. I knew they were not going to win a Stanley Cup. Not this year. That was for damn sure. And yes, I knew all the arguments, starting with the fact that they were President's Trophy winners. Yeah, right. Because nothing guarantees a Stanley Cup like winning a President's Trophy. Oh, and then there's the one that they were so solid between the pipes. Only a dope would think that Pekka Rinne was better this year when he was only a year older. And that was clearly demonstrated last night. Don't get me wrong. He was a great goalie. But I'm starting to lean more and more on the past tense there. Was. And in this series, when he was good, he was very good. And when he was bad, he was terrible. Gave up 3 goals in game 1 before being pulled. Staked to a 3-0 lead in game 3. Promptly allows 5 goals. And then a half a dozen in game 5. Hey, don't get me wrong. I'm not here to crush Nashville. I love Philip Forsberg. He was electric. He provided 3 truly legendary goals in this year's playoffs. But when I look at that roster, I didn't see the depth that everybody else seemed to see. While everybody else was saying that they were the best team from top to bottom, that they were loaded up front, that they had monsters back on the blue line, that they had a wizard between the pipes, you know what I saw? I saw a paper tiger. So for all those losers who were claiming that Nashville was the team to beat this year, when they looked at that roster and they saw the shortcomings, what did they do? Man, they started reaching for straws. That's what they did, grasping at intangibles. You know, like this notion of they had unfinished business or they had scar tissue. What is that? That's the argument of somebody who doesn't have an argument. Unfinished business. Do you know how hard it is to go all the way, climb up just short, and then try to get to the top of that mountain again? And for you non-hockey fans, let me put it to you this way. How many NFL teams lose the Super Bowl and then come right back to win it next year? No, better yet, how many NFL teams lose the Super Bowl and then flat out miss the playoffs the next year? Yes, they had been there and done that. But what they had done was lose on the biggest stage. That's not an accomplishment. That's a disappointment, no matter what seed you were going into last year's playoffs. Why would I pick somebody like that? I wouldn't, obviously. Oh, and here's another thing. Last year was last year. If you were basing your predictions off some combination of what last year's team did in the playoffs and what this year's team did in the regular season, that's bad math. It doesn't add up. Not for me, not even close. And how about those dopes? Those dopes who claimed that, well, they had scar tissue. That would help them get over the hump. If scar tissue from losing mattered, the Cleveland Browns would be stacking Lombardis. So you all can miss me with that idea that Winnipeg beating Nashville is some huge upset because Nashville was so good. Yet whatever. They didn't impress me this year, and I certainly was not going to be picking them to win the whole thing. You got to be a hell of a lot deeper. You have to be a lot more explosive, and you've got to be a lot tougher mentally and physically if you want Vance Mack's pick. You're welcome. And for those of you still shaking your head, you want proof. You want a true demonstration that this is not revisionist history. All right, fine. You want that? You got that. Alvin, play my prediction, please, from the start of the playoffs. With great power comes great responsibility. Every year, the Cup demands as much. So much to like. So many great story angles. So many teams that have a legitimate look at this. However, there is one thing that I like even more. The one team I like even more. The team I like best. The Winnipeg Jets. I like Jets, mate.
We see Jets, mate.
And round 2, the Preds will be taken to the woodshed by Winnipeg 4-3. Because Nashville has got no business having a hockey team. They turned a country music city into a 2. Start catfish town. Worse than Cleveland. You see, this year is different. This group is different. And by different, I mean worse. Pekka Rinne should be benched and far away from the pipes. This is about Connor Hellebuck owning Nashville. Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson. These guys are crappy. We know that. PK, so bad. You are so bad. No team has worse depth at center ice or suck on the blue line. David Poile built a brutal
diarrhea
mess. Head coach Peter Laviolette. He's got these guys saying 1, 2, 3, Cancun. It's not Smashville's year. This time it is going to be Winnipeg. The butthurt Preds have been there. They've done that. And now they're coming home with freaking nothing. Write it down now. Thank me later. Because while I've been wrong about many, many things, picking the eventual round two winner is not one of them. So congratulations, Winnipeg Jets. And most importantly, Jim Rome. There. There. Are you satisfied? I know I am. It's hard work being right about the NHL every year. It's hard. Jalen Ramsey is my guest. Jalen, it is great to have you on the show. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, man. What's up, man? We can keep talking about the Preds if you want. I mean, they got me sad right now. You know, that's my team too. I'm from Nashville. That's my team. So they got me sad right now.
I hear you. I wish I could say that I picked them, but I did not. But I could see where you're coming from. That's a good team that had a great regular season. You know, I want to talk to you about hockey, but I got to talk to you. I got to get caught up first. You know, I know how locked in, how focused you are, but talk to me about your offseason. How has that been going? What have you been up to?
My offseason has been going so far. I've been back home in Nashville, Tennessee most of the time. My dad, who's trained me all my life, really, he trains me still to this day. So I've been back home training with him, spending a lot of time with family and friends, going places here and there, taking a vacation here and there. Been back to Jacksonville, taking on my house there a couple times, and just been kind of living my best life, man.
Hey, man, that's the bottom line. I love that, living my best life. Now, when you arrived in Jacksonville, they weren't living their best life. In fact, they had not reached the playoffs since the 07 season. And then in your first season, the team won 3 games. But then you break out last year. You win 10 games. You get within a game of the Super Bowl. So what was the biggest thing that changed last season?
I think it just all started to come together, really. I don't think we can point to, you know, one or two specific things, but we finished getting the pieces that we needed in. You know, we started getting the pieces during my draft class on the defensive side of the ball. Then we finished out getting the pieces last year in free agency. And then the draft, we got a couple of offensive pieces to, kind of mold the type of team we were going to be, a downfield running team with, play action passes, a lot of managing, and then really led by the defense side of the ball, to winning games by the defense side of the ball. So we got those pieces in, and we all started to build that chemistry and bond, and it just, things fell into place.
Jalen Ramsey joining us. You know, I think anytime I've got a great cornerback on the show, I like to pick their brains about how they go about their job, what their process is. So how would you describe the mentality and the attitude that it takes to be an elite cornerback in the NFL?
Man, the mentality is different than any other position, I feel like, because a cornerback is, or any defensive back, rather, is, me personally, I think it's the hardest job besides quarterback. You got to, guard some of the best athletes on the field with the receivers. They're fast, they're big nowadays, they're quick. They can do really much do it all. If you get beat, everybody's going to know. It's not like, maybe in the interior, if you lose a battle, and I mean, too many people will know. If you get beat for a touchdown, people are going to know that's on you, but you have to have a short memory. You have to be able to bounce back every play. It's just a mindset that you can't really describe. It's just something that you kind of have to have. Kind of have to have that fierce competitive nature, that swag about you. And I think I have all those attributes.
I think you do. I'm glad I asked the question because I know it takes a certain mentality, a different breed of cat, really, to play out there on the island. Now, some cornerbacks make every matchup with the receiver personal. Is that how you approach it? Is it personal like that? Or do you really not care who they put in front of you? It's just your job to shut that person down, whoever it is.
It's not really personal. It's just a job. Like, it's my job. So whoever's, and I take my job seriously, so whoever's out there in front of me, I'm going to make sure that I do whatever I can to win my matchups and put my team in the best you know, position I can for them to win the game if it comes down to me and my matchup. So I guess you can say it's a little personal because I take my job very, very seriously. And I love it, so it is.
You know, in terms of you taking the job seriously, I think your head coach would speak to that too. Doug Marrone says that every week he can go up to you and ask you about the guy that you're playing against, and you'll give him a very long, detailed answer that covers everything about your opponent. So how much of what you do is about pure physical ability, and how much of that is about studying and the film work that you do?
You know, it's about 50-50. God just blessed me with the gift of being athletic and being able to play football well. So that's a gift. I did nothing for it. He just gave me that gift. And what I did, I just tried to develop that gift into a skill. I worked really hard, extremely hard, you know, so hard that's why I have the confidence that I do have. People think, you know, I just have it for certain reasons. People think I want to, you know, he's the best for whatever reason. He lucked up. No, it's not luck or anything. I was blessed, and I worked really, really hard. On the field, if I'm working out, doing footwork, lifting weights, but also in the film room, like I know my plays very well. That's not even a worry in my mind. But not knowing my plays, I want to know the opponent's plays as well. So I'm studying film on tendencies and you know, other players' favorite routes to run and quarterbacks' favorite routes to throw. Offensive coordinator's favorite plays to run on certain downs. I'm just 100% locked in, laser focused on the task I have at hand.
Jalen Ramsey, my guest. I know a couple of things. Preparation does breed confidence, and game respects game. And to that point, I've noticed that you've been tweeting a lot about LeBron James during the playoffs. As one elite athlete and competitor looking at another, what do you think when you see him doing what he's doing right now?
Oh my goodness. The longevity. I mean, he's not only been great throughout his entire career, in my opinion, the greatest basketball player to ever play the game, but he's also doing it like this is year 15. He's doing it in year 15 at the highest level that you can do it at. He should, in my opinion, he should be the MVP this year, but, you know, they might give it to James Harden or another guy who's also had good seasons. But, I mean, to be able to do this year and year and year and year over and over and over, when guys know what you have to offer, like guys know what you're going to bring out there to the game every time, that they can't and still can't stop you. Like you, that's when you can just, that's greatness. When someone knows what you're going to do, but they still can't stop you. That's the ultimate confidence. But he knows how much hard work he puts in, how much investment he puts into his body. I mean, it's all paying off, so I'm not surprised at any of it at all. But yeah, it's just watching greatness. I love being able to go watch greatness in other sports, and I'm definitely a basketball fan, so I like going to watch basketball games as often as I can.
Jalen Ramsey breaking it down. All right, so one last thought. I know the team is going to break out some new gear this year, and I know you're going to break out some new Jordan cleats this year. Can you give me a hint or a sense of what they're going to look like?
Oh, man, I wish I could. I really, you know, they, I got to design some few pair of cleats this year, and a couple colorways, a couple keys, some very special stuff on the way, some exclusive special edition stuff on the way this year as far as my cleats go, and I don't want to spoil it for people. You really got to stay tuned for this. They've sent some stuff, and it is crazy, just to say the least. That it's just crazy, to be honest. So this year is going to be some – you've never seen a player wear what I'm about to wear this year on the football field.
I thought I'd take a shot, and I figured you'd answer it like that. But I know also look good, feel good, play good. Jalen Ramsey, my guest. Fifth overall pick in 2016. Jalen, great to get caught up, man. I appreciate you, and nice to have you on the show. Let's do it again soon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me.
Let's go to the phones. Omaha, Nebraska. I love Omaha. Kathleen in Omaha. Kathleen, hi. How are you?
Fine.
What's up? You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
I do, Kathleen. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. enough. You're wrong. You pick Nashville. Or as I like to call them, Trashville. You did not pick Winnipeg. I heard, and it's the same as last year when I know you picked Washington and Chicago. And the time before that, when it was L.A. and San Jose, you pick L.A. and San you have really, really infuriated me.
Kathleen, man. whoa. Kathleen, I got to ask you something. I know that voice, Kathleen. I know you, and I know your voice, and I'm not sure where from. Wait a minute. I think I do know. Kathleen, oh, hold on. Yeah. Hold on. Kathleen, is this you from the podcast? Alvin, Sydney, do this.
Sydney Crosby? How did she get that? How did he get that big, luscious ass and those succulent lips? Is your ass bigger than Madison Bumgarner of the San Francisco Giants? Oh, man.
Kathleen, is that you?
Yes.
It is, isn't it? I knew it.
I regret making that call. Seriously, I regret it.
Why?
I should have never done it.
Why? Why would you regret that? You just got to own that.
Because, okay, what? Sydney about Sydney, yes, it's all true, the ass, the lips. But I was trying to imagine what Sydney's reaction would be if he heard it, and I thought, and that actually went through with it and then freeze up like some idiot.
Well, let me ask you this. If you regret that, then why did you double down and parlay that into a take about Mad Bum?
I don't know, man. I think about, because Madison, of course, I love the Giants, and he, well, I don't know, because it...
Kathleen, you're the best. Let me ask you this then. If you're lusting after professional athletes like that, what about like your boyfriend or your husband? What's he think about all that?
Oh, my boyfriend is currently where he is, and I never told him. And it, actually, I started...
Where? Where is he, Kathleen? What do you mean he is where he is?
He's in Iowa, and he started writing me in October, and I made that about Sydney in August.
He's in prison?
Yes.
What did he do to go to prison?
I never asked.
You never asked?
No, I never asked.
How long have you guys been going out?
It's October of last year when we started writing, so I guess 7 months.
Wait a minute, Kathleen, were you not going out with him prior to him being incarcerated, or did you maybe meet with him on the inside?
No, I never been to jail myself. My cousin is the one that gave him my name. I didn't know jack squat about this guy.
So that's like Match.com, but he's on the inside. So you haven't met him yet?
He sent me a picture. I sent him some of me. He gets out in July.
All right, I got you. So it's coming pretty quickly, yet you want to call me and tell me that I've been lying about my picks?
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
You said Nashville! What? Like the column.
All right, now we're going in circles. Kathleen, you are the absolute best. It is so good to have you on. Rack her. You are wrong about what you say about my pick, but you are a gem, Kathleen. No! Get it.
On CBS Sports Radio.
That. And also live from the Quicken Loan Studios. A tremendous Monday to you. What's going on? Let's get started. Lots to get to. Let's talk Western Conference playoffs in the NBA. Yesterday was a rough day for the NBA underdogs.
Been here before, 3-1. F***ing bad real quick.
Yeah! We'll exactly call them the Hamptons Five.
It's a scary lineup. And that crew is not looking to talk hedge funds or polo, which private schools their kids get into. They're looking to destroy you and snatch your soul.
LeBron into the forecourt, banks it up! Oh, he did it again! LeBron James kissed it home!
I've been doing that since I was like 8 years old, maybe even before that.
This is why I'm calling on the NBA to just cancel game four. Pull this guy off them. My guest is Chris Mannix.
Like, he's the GOAT, he's this.
No, I try not to make that referendum, mostly because I don't care. You know, that's an argument for when LeBron's done.
I truly believe I probably have the most talented horse.
He was all out to win that race. Justify was geared down. And as Mike said, he probably could have gone around again.
I had the winner. I was on hold Friday, but it never got around to getting to me.
Josh in Detroit is RSVPing for the smack off. Josh, I mean, you're a good dude and all. I don't even invite you to call the regular show on a Tuesday. Tony Luffman.
I am in tears. That was so good.
Uh-huh. Oh, man, you got to change up. You have to stop licking other players. I'm not convinced because he doesn't think you did anything wrong. He wants people to get off his back.
Thank you.
I'm on the wagon right now. I'm on this diet. Got two more days, then I'm going to turn it loose, brother.
Brother. Oh, man. All right, so that first adult beverage back.
Oh, it's going to be clear all the way.
Kyle in Green Bay, and now making the ultimate stop. If you're going to make a clone tour, and you're driving across the country, and you're going to end up in my backyard, hell yes, you better end up at Javier's.
Hell yeah!
Now in studio live, Arian Foster.
Oh, son, Tupac died. It's crazy. And I was like, what? My world was, I cried. I was okay.
I got you. We got you. You're all right. Raleigh, North Carolina. How y'all living? 620, the ticket. What's cracking? Dwight Freeney.
Me and Raheem sat there like, man, this dude is ancient. Man, there's no way we're playing this long. Look at this guy. Look at me now. You know, I'm year 16.
Twitter. Does that sound Corey Pavin gnawing through blocks of cheddar in a cheese eating contest? Everybody knows that's a delephant eating corn on the cob. Make it harder next time. There's another rousing rendition of You Name the Sound. Chris Haynes joins me.
Ty Lue said, yeah, Kyle Lowry called me and asked me if I could help him work out. During the series, Jim, never even heard of that before.
And now Alex. Oh!
Good luck living with that for the rest of your life.
The moose would get loose.
I'm not here to pile on a guy who had a bad night, but that guy had the worst night.
And he's slamming the Milwaukee's best. What's wrong, John? Was it out of a can that just says beer on it?
Looks like Chris Paul got the better end of that Blake Griffin divorce.
Consider that a divorce.
Who got to keep the house and the jet and the cars?
But first of all, big picture.
We will stop this tournament.
Get some therapy. Kyle, get a roof. A roof over your head. Not a car roof, Kyle. Get a room. You know what? Cornhole is a reason to go.
Hit the crap.
I'm just feeling a little bad for this bum and his friend, and I'm actually going to offer him a shower.
2-1.
The best jumper in baseball is finding his swing. That ball did travel far. Really far. Cody Garbrandt joins me in studio.
You have 7 months left. You've been doing so well. I promise you that if you beat cancer, I promise you I'll make it to the UFC and I'll take you to every fight with. August 25th, a little kid called me and said, hey, Cody, I kept my end of the promise. It's your turn.
Mike Gundy, are you cool if we don't talk football at all?
We can talk anything you want. I've got enough things going on outside of football.
Adam Hawk at the Beast 980 in Los Angeles.
Score! React to me, Winnipeg. I want to hear from Swan River, Selkirk, Winkler. How are you celebrating? Thompson, Mystery Lake. The team I like best, the Winnipeg Jets. I like Jets, mate.
We see Jets, mate.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
Jalen Ramsey is my guest.
Hey, we can keep talking about the Bulls if you want.
They got me sad right now. You know, that's my team, too.
I hear
you.
I wish I could say that I picked them, but I did
not.
Good
words for Kyle in Green Bay.
Wesley Woodyard is my guest.
B-Dog, why don't you come out the tunnel like you did in Philly? And he was like, God dog, it would. They don't give me enough smoke like I need here in Denver like they gave me in Philly.
You did not pick Winnipeg, same as last year when I know you picked Washington and Chicago.
Bob Bagfert.
Dropping smelly.
Oh!
Mendelsohn.
What'd he say?
Perform. We're going straight for the neck.
War Romy.
Unwar Comey.
I'm going to be out there. I'm going to look you up.
Thanks, Romy. Hook 'em horn.
Cancun.
Good night now!
Yes, I did pick Winnipeg. Alvin, that was magic. That was absolutely velvet.
Good night!